Welcome to the podcast of Thousand Harbors Zen, featuring talks with Cohen France. This podcast is made possible by generous donations from our listeners. To contribute or to learn more about our community, please visit thousandharborszen.com.
This Saturday was February 8th, which in the Zen calendar is what we call Nehan. It's the day that we acknowledge the passing away of the Buddha. Nehan means nirvana. And it seems that whenever we talk about the Buddha dying or someone like Shariputra or, you know, someone in that sphere dying, we never say they died. We say this is when they entered nirvana, right? Which sounds great. And I think that because the tradition really feeds this, we have these images, some of them of specific teachers along the way, and some of them maybe just a general sense that when an enlightened person dies, it's really beautiful, right? It's lovely. They, you know, maybe they lie down and they say just the thing that everyone needs to hear in that moment, and then they close their eyes. Or maybe they, you know, sit up in this posture and get themselves all ready, and then settle deeply into meditation. And then, in this moment that no one can quite visually grasp, they kind of fall away, right? And there's just robes. It's, again, we can all be forgiven for succumbing to this particular story because we're encouraged to have this story. We're supposed to believe that it looks kind of like that. And so it's maybe ironic that the person at the beginning, the Buddha, that is not his story. There are different accounts, and we have to kind of triangulate, and I don't have the passages in front of me, which I should have because it would make the story more interesting, but basically what we're told, and this should give us a little, I think, a little trust in the Pali canon, because this isn't the story that you keep exactly if you're trying to make it perfect. But the Buddha went to visit someone and was served a meal. And that meal, depending on the account, was pork or mushrooms. And following the meal, the Buddha became very, very ill. And in some passages, it becomes quite specific about the ways in which he became ill. And it was horrible. He was racked with pain and had horrible diarrhea and experienced a day or two of a kind of pain and indignity that none of us ever want to have. It's the thing that we, in some ways, maybe dread the most. A loss of physical control, an inability to regulate the pain of it. And importantly, along the way, either because this experience was so intense or because of some omniscience, the Buddha knows. He's going through all this and he knows he's dying. And so in the middle of all of this intense suffering and the panic of the people around him, none of whom saw this coming, he's experiencing what he's experiencing, and he's also, to a certain degree, putting his house in order. Not in big ways, not in the ways that you might think that you would, but by leaving a few kind of parting notes for people, some of which are to the tune of, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And some of which, you know, in retrospect, are just unfortunate. There were so many rules that the monks followed, and famously, as the Buddha was dying, he said, you only have to follow the major rules, not the minor ones. And everyone said, oh, okay, okay. And then he died, and they said, which ones were the major ones and which ones were the minor ones? Nobody asked, big mistake. So I have this experience maybe three times a year, when we reach the Buddha's enlightenment and when we reach Nihan, and then when we reach the Buddha's birthday, where I find myself thinking a lot about the Buddha, not so much for myself, but because I feel always like I need to be able to articulate something about his experience. And of course, I didn't meet him, and you didn't meet him. And I'm not sure which parts of the story matter. But I find that this story, this particular story, in which he faces his death, his very unenviable death in this way, is a meaningful story. And I can say a little bit about why. Just the other day, I was listening to someone talking, and they said in a kind of casual way, you know, imagine how you might act differently if you knew you were dying. And, you know, I've been offered that thought exercise 1,000 times in my life. And I've offered that thought exercise many, many times. And I would tell anyone that this is a meaningful question to hold. But, you know, sometimes the timing is just right for you to hear something differently. And when I heard this, it was like all of my resistance to this question fell away. And it suddenly wasn't intellectual. And it didn't go to the places where it usually goes. If I ask in a big room full of people, you know, you go to the doctor and the doctor says, you're dying. We don't know how much time you have, but it might not be much. It might be only weeks or only days. Get your house in order. If I say that to a big group of people, I think that many people in that room will immediately go to the grand gesture, right? What's the big thing that you have been putting off? The big thing that you need to do to make it okay that you're dying? You know, and for a few of them, it might be like, oh, I have to vanquish my enemies soon. But mostly, it goes to this other kind of narcissistic place. And I don't want to say that in too judgmental a way, because we all have dreams and we all have things that we stifle. We have things that are unaddressed. And some of them, if we look at this question seriously, if we hold it seriously, if we look at it with both eyes open, there might be something that's been eating us that we haven't been addressing that we need to address. Something big, you know, that's possible. But on, this was Friday, when this hit me really, really hard, I had no impulse toward the grand gesture. I didn't think, oh, I'm dying. I need to go lock myself in a room and finally write that book. What I thought was, oh, I'm dying. It's okay if I don't write that book. I'm going to let that one go because I don't have time. And that's okay. And I was very lucky because on Friday it was a snow day, and so everyone was home, and I'm surrounded by my family, and I'm emerging into this group of people, and I'm holding this idea, and I'm really asking myself moment to moment. I'm on day 5 now of being kind of consumed by this question. And I'm walking around, I'm talking to my wife, and I'm talking to my kids, and I'm seeing how in the knowledge that I'm dying, I'm kinder, and I'm more patient, and I have a better sense of humor. And I see that thing that is so irritating, it's not my job to fix that, right? All the things that I want to control all the time, and I do try to control a lot of little things, it's a vice. They seem much less compelling. And I'll say a little bit about my own experience of this, because maybe it's useful if you try. I had this kind of magical weekend of really feeling like I was looking at this in the face. I kept asking myself, I'd wake up in the morning, I'd remember immediately, right? Put yourself in the mind that you're dying. and then go about your day. And I keep doing ordinary things. Again, nothing big is happening, but the quality has changed. But then I went to work yesterday, right? And what I found was it's harder. And it has nothing to do with, for example, the existence or non-existence of affection for people or caring about people or anything like that. But there's a kind of baseline of easy intimacy that I have in certain spaces, right? That where it seems like I'm relatively unhindered in trying to go to the bottom of this question of how do I look at my son as he's telling me some story about something at school, right? How do I really listen to this if it's the last thing I'll ever hear from him? Or if it's the last time he'll see me listening? What I find is that this can be painful. The recognition is I know how to do that. I just don't do it most of the time. But I do kind of know how. When I go to work, so I've been carrying this for 2 days at work, and it remains a really compelling place to be holding my mind. But that kind of simple intimacy is not the same. And so the answers don't feel as straightforward, right? I feel like I know what to do when my daughter comes and says, look at this. But when I'm in a meeting and we're talking about something, some project that is like all the other projects, then I have this completely new question. How do I hold myself now in this? And what I find is that there it stops being an easy answer about how I'm holding space for another person, though I would like it if those answers were easier. And it starts to slip into a kind of gratitude about little things. You know, I'm watching people, and I'm fortunate because I like everyone I work with. I'm watching their little mannerisms, you know, the funny little things that they do when they talk, the weird lunches they bring, you know, which are sometimes truly remarkable. And seeing that I can just enjoy all of that, right? I don't know if I'm caught, you know, when I'm with my family, I feel like there's a kind of benefit that I can offer by holding this view. And when I'm with people I'm less close to, I'm not sure of that benefit, but I'm sure that I can be there in a different way, right? I find that when I walk, I can enjoy walking, because actually walking is great, right? What a great experience. And when I'm drinking tea is great. And I know as I'm saying all this, that on the one hand, it's so kind of obvious. And on the other hand, it can become very, you know, there's a part of me that's, I'm very ready to forgive you if you start rolling your eyes because he's on this cloud today, right? But again, because the timing was right, because I was ready to think about this in this way, the last few days for me have been not ordinary days. And I'm not putting my house in order, right? Again, my impulse isn't to do something, but it's to be different. And even tonight, I'm sitting here, and I'm sitting, and I'm also looking up, and I'm seeing all of you. And I'm aware of how so much of my mind, so much of my mental chatter often is about this community, and about how we create the structures whereby this community can be a healthy and strong and vibrant community for years into the future. I think about this all the time. And tonight I come in and I have this lens. I'm in this weird mood, right? And I'm sitting and I'm looking at all of you. And what I'm thinking is, it's fine, right? That doesn't mean there's nothing to be done. But it means if this is my last day, I trust this, however it goes. In that recognition of trust is the recognition that my illusion of control has always been an illusion. It is for all of us, all the time. I really invite you, and I know it's not the first time I've said it, but I think it's the first time I've said it like this. I really invite you to hear it. You're dying. And you can play this as a thought exercise, but keep in mind, you're dying, and we don't know how much time you have. But it might not be much. It might be weeks. It might just be days. Act like it. I'll stop there.
You have been listening to a Thousand Harbors Zen podcast. Please visit thousandharborszen.com.